The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host, guest, random reptoid, or chupacabra may not necessarily reflect those of AM 950 Radio, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Now, it's time to step into the unknown. There are things people experience but never talk about. A shadow moving in the corner, flickering of the lights, a disembodied voice. We invite you to talk with us. Share your story, share your experience. Because this isn't just your story, this is our story. This is Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken.
And this is Ghost Box Radio on AM 950, where every night we talk about the paranormal, ufology, Bigfoot, and so much more. My name is Greg Bakken, and thank you very much for joining me tonight. First off, I just wanted to say, wow, what a weekend. You know, you've been hearing me talk about this literally for months, the Anderson House event with Dave Schrader in Wabasha, Minnesota. That was just this past weekend, and wow, what an event. All my expectations were blown away. I'm going to be very honest there. And before we get to our guest tonight, I just have to say, first of all, thank you to my co-conspirator, Char Savoy, as we put this event together. Also want to thank Kyle and Austin and Tree, and yes, that is her name, and John for all the work they did when we keeping the event going really well. Also, Becky, thank you so very much for running the hotel, and your staff. The people there are wonderful. They worked very hard to keep everything moving, and I really do appreciate that. And of course, to Dave Schrader, really what a fantastic guest for a convention, for an event. And we actually are going to be playing this Thursday a episode we recorded this last Saturday at the Anderson House in front of a live audience. About 40 people were there, and they had questions for Dave, and we asked all sorts of questions, and really, it's very enjoyable. We're going to run that on Thursday, so definitely check that out. That's going to be a lot of fun. You know, this is something that I'm really excited to be able to talk about tonight. It's a film that I think we've all have seen. What we know about it, I have a feeling, varies from person to person. I've seen it mocked many times. I didn't even know that the film had a name. There's a lot about the film I didn't know, and that is the famous Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot footage taken in 1967 of this creature walking bipedal across the screen. It's you know, I mean, I just remember images of this from watching, like, In Search Of, you know, that sort of thing. Very exciting, very cool, but didn't know any really a whole lot more about it than that. And I know that I'm a little behind the times here, but I also, I found out that work had been done to enhance it, to make it better, to maybe get some more information from the images on the screen. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. I have MK Davis with me tonight, who has been working on this for, I think, a couple years now. MK, how are you today?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you for having me on.
No, thank you very much for coming on. I mean, this is one of those things that, I mean, to me, this is new information because I am, you know, I live in a cave, a little cave, I think. But you've been working on this for a while, haven't you?
Yeah, more like about 25 years.
Oh, that's all. Okay, well, better late than never for me is what I'm thinking. For those who know about the film but don't know about the film, if you don't mind me, if you get what I mean, can you tell us about the Patterson-Gimlin film, please, as far as its origin?
Yeah, it was taken in Northern California, Del Norte County, in an area called the Bluff Creek Drainage. It was taken, there were two men involved in the taking of the film. I tend to call it the Patterson film because Mr. Gimlin didn't touch the camera.
Sure.
And in general rule, you know, it gets, it's the person who actually takes the camera that gets the name on it.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, it's to each, you know, to each his own.
Yeah.
you'll find out when you talk to me that I look at it sort of matter-of-factly. I'm not a folklorist or anything like that. I look strictly at the film itself to see what's on it, and if I can help the film garner details out of the film that would tell us one way or another if it's real or if it's not real, just the facts.
Now, when you got into all of this, did you have, and maybe you still, I mean, I don't know where you stand in terms of your belief into the creature in general. When you started working on the film in terms of trying to dissect it a little bit more, did you have any sort of preconceived notions of what you thought that was captured?
Not really. I felt like there's kind of a general rule. I'm an astrophotographer.
Mm-hmm.
I take space photos. And when I got into this, it's because I saw a couple of really good frames from the original master that were so superior to anything that I had ever seen on television or in the theaters when it made a theater run.
Mm-hmm.
That I felt like that if you could improve it just 1%, the general rule is that you'll see 10 new things.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that the film might tell its own story.
Sure.
If you could improve it. And when I say improve it, I mean some of the lens defects can be improved on, chromatic aberration, you know, where it doesn't focus. Inexpensive lenses tend not to focus all the colors to one point. And you can actually use filtration and sharpen that up a good bit, and then bring everything to center with some stabilization. Your mind and your eyes work together to watch it, and it's hard to concentrate on more than one plane of movement at the same time. So you got the up and down motion of the camera, you got the background coming by right to left, and then you got the subject. And so what I did was to create stabilization where the subject is in the center and stays in the center. And you only have the motion of the subject as it swings its arms and moves its legs.
Yeah, that's something that I was watching a video that you put out about 2 years ago. And, you know, I want to get into that in a second. But I wanted to ask, what did you use as your master to do the work that you've done on it?
It's taken me quite a few years. I've made inquiries and traveled to Oregon, Washington State, California. I've had people from Canada send me the images from the film that were closer to the master.
Mm-hmm.
And as I began to collect these, I could take those images. And once you get to a certain level of quality, you can turn a good picture into a great picture.
Sure.
If you have the knowledge to do so and the equipment. So, go ahead.
Was the original film shot in 16 mil?
Yeah, 16 millimeters.
Okay, and I thought, did I read correctly, like 18 frames per second or something along those lines?
No, it wasn't 18. It was slower than that.
Was it slower than that?
Yeah, it was probably just shy of 16 frames per second.
Okay. Does the original film still exist?
It does. I read some material on it, and it said that it was in a vault. And it had never been projected. It, wherever it is, whoever has it in that vault has a real treasure.
They do. And it's very interesting because, I mean, you could imagine, because I'm not quite sure. You're going off of imagery. You're going off of, I'm presuming, then video files, right? Opposed to a fresh, obviously not a fresh scan, which would be really interesting.
Oh, I have some fresh scans also. I visited with Ms. Patterson.
Okay.
Roger Patterson's widow.
Right.
And she had some transparencies that were taken right off the original. Mm. And she allowed me to scan. I went to a photo house there in Yakima, Washington. And she allowed me to scan those. And then I have some others that were intended for publication, that they were inner negatives were made, and paper cibachrome prints made. And I have quite a few of those. And then I have a copy of the film. I worked with a copy of the film for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then another copy was photographed through a microscope. And that was sent to me to work with. And I was able, they all have something to offer.
Sure.
You know, some may seem clear, but it may, the color may not be quite as good, or one may be more, the color better, but you know, just that type of thing. Some of them, maybe the sandbar shows up better, maybe, so, you know, not so much in another. When you break something down forensically, you know, it's not just entertainment. You're looking mm-hmm. for details. So you start to collect all of the images that you can get. If you get a paper image from 1967, it's probably going to be yellowed. You know, the paper will turn it yellow color.
Right.
And so you're going to have to correct for that to get it back to its, you know, vibrant color. And if you get some of the other, you know, the transmission images, the film, it tends to turn reddish.
Yeah.
The plastic, the color that dyes are okay, but the actual plastic will turn color. So you have to try to, you know, correct for that. And then you're trying to produce something that's really, that will stand out. And I think a good photographic term would be to pop,
mm-hmm.
You know, to really see all the details.
What?
I was really surprised when I first stabilized it. I filtered it to get chromatic aberration corrected.
Uh-huh.
And so I save the images in black and white. So when I put them in an animator, it was 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and I hit preview, and I was shocked myself at just what I was seeing on that film. When you hold that subject steady, you see the minutiae. You see the clavicle under the skin move mm-hmm. up and down, and things like that. Things that you recognize from everyday life. That these were biomechanics, not a suit. So I was prepared for if I saw a zipper, that would be fine with me. But that has not been the case.
The face, her face, which for those who don't know, that creature is female, and if I'm not mistaken, she's been named Patty, right?
Well, I mean, it's just that name.
That's what they stuck, yeah. But seeing her face in your video, and we're going to go to break in a couple minutes here, but seeing her face in the video just really, to me, was an immediate, like, there is no way. I know you looked at everything else to do with her movement and the muscle structure and stuff, but her face, to me, was like, this is no mask. This is no suit. This was absolutely an eye-opener for me, looking at that.
Yeah, well, me too.
I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, just the look on her face, looking back at the camera, and it's mesmerizing, even, watching her walk. and watching her, just seeing the movement and looking to see if I could find anything. I mean, I don't know anything about this stuff, but anything that I could see that'd be like, oh, well, that you can explain this away and that away. That's pretty incredible.
Well, there's been some recent progress when it comes to her face. There was a gentleman from Oklahoma by the name of Todd Gatewood,
mm-hmm.
who got in touch with me, and he said he had some processes that he wanted to try, and I had the single best image from the film, and I sent that to him to let him try it out. And when he got through, I was just mesmerized by it. The face, even you could see individual hairs on her head.
Yeah.
The eyeball, you could see the cornea in there, and all kinds of details like that. It was just incredible. And the face, when you see that face, it kind of grips your heart.
It does. Now Todd is watching tonight. Hi Todd. Okay, nice to watch you. Let's do this though. Let's go ahead and we're going to take our first break. What we're going to do, we have so much to talk about. If you have questions about anything that MK Davis is talking about, this is so fascinating and it's really cool to break this down. We're talking about the Patterson Gimlin film. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on AM 950.
Reach your highest level of consciousness and well-being with MetamorphosisConnections.com. MetamorphosisConnections.com is an online directory of the best holistic and metaphysical practitioners to help you make your most informed choices. You can search MetamorphosisConnections.com for classes, events, wellness and life coaches, plus metaphysical products and shops. You can also search for a wide array of healers from all modalities, including EFT, sound healing, energy healing, light therapy, ancestral healing, shamanic healing, reflexology, past life regressions, hypnotherapy, yoga, and more. And if you're not sure where to start, the search feature on MetamorphosisConnections.com is tailored to help both those who know what they are looking for and those who are just starting. Come explore the possibilities for your higher self by visiting MetamorphosisConnections.com. Their experienced practitioners can guide both beginners and those that are already on their spiritual journey. That's MetamorphosisConnection.com, your link to direct you on your spiritual transformation.
You know, as I said in the last segment, I was watching MK Davis's video about this wonderful film and the work that he's been doing on it. Then I went down a rabbit hole and I started watching, before I left my home to come here, I started watching other videos about sightings and what some of these sightings are, and some of them not, you know, very, very obviously not real. And then, of course, some of them, they're scaring the you-know-what out of me, and I have to still get in my car, which is in my home is in a wooded area. Then I'm coming out here, which is in a wooded area, and I'm just like, no, this is faint of heart, you know, I'm just already this is already too much. It doesn't take much, MK Davis. I don't know. We have MK Davis with us, and he's been doing a lot of work on the Patterson Gimlin film, the famous Bigfoot film that was shot in 1967. Also, like we said last segment, you had mentioned that Todd Gatewood was helping you, came to some conclusions. He's actually, at least he was, hopefully still is, listening as well. And Todd, if you want to come on the program at some point down the line, I'd be more than happy to have you on. MK, I have a more of a comment, I guess, really, from Ernie Pack. He says, there's just a brief image of the bottom of the creature's foot. That's what I wished I could see more clearly. It would be very difficult to mimic that with a suit or a costume. And it's funny because that caught my attention today, too, when I was watching a few of these YouTube uploads of that film.
Well, let me see what I can find on that. I have lots of material. If I can get one that's got the very clear image of the foot bottom. I actually have a cast right here. Let's see here.
For those of you who are just listening on the radio, and you're very interested in this, I bet you wish you were watching the live stream video of this right now, because MK is holding up a cast from that film.
That's the foot right there. You can see it's back up a little bit.
That's incredible.
It's very, very flat-footed. Like me, I'm very flat-footed. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good size foot. They get bigger, but this is Mrs. Bigfoot. you move up to Mr. Bigfoot, it'd be a good bit bigger.
How long after the film was shot did they take that cast?
This was taken that very day.
Wow.
Well, no, I take that back. It could have been taken. Patterson took a couple, but later on, Robert Titmus went back in there and took some more. I think this is one that Patterson took because he chose the very best looking ones,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily the most valuable scientifically.
Okay.
The ones with the flexion, you know, at the bottom of the foot, bending and moving. Even though they weren't as aesthetic, they were still, they didn't look as good as this one.
Yeah.
So they picked those up later. Some other people that came in there and did that.
So, you know, it's absolutely incredible. And the film or the video that I saw that you had put out about 2 years ago, what I thought was really interesting is that you had focused on that she had something that was, I don't know, attached or whatever to her left side, and it's bigger than her hand, but at least at the time of the video, no, you can't really tell what it is, but there is something there.
Yeah, it's I found it in four places, mm-hmm. in the film. It's in one place where it comes back far enough, you can see that it's not being held by the left hand, it's being steadied by the left hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's suspended on a lanyard around her neck.
Sure.
And you can see that in several of the zebra chrome prints. They're pretty good quality. You can see it. So whatever she's got there on her left side that she holds, he keeps it from swinging with her left hand. You don't have but a minute of film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you try to extrapolate all you can from it. When I find something like that, you know, I publish it. People can make of it what they want, but you know, it's there.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. It follows along with her, and you know, it's conjecture to try to figure out what it is, I guess, in a sense. But you got to wonder: is it some kind of satchel or something? And is that like a look at the inner workings of their society in some ways? If she's out with something, and perhaps that she needs something to put other things in or something. I don't know.
Well, in the days of yore, they had what they call a parfletch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just basically it's kind of a pouch. It could be a pouch. It could be just something you fold. You know, you put your things in it, and you fold it and tie it up. Or it could be a satchel, like you said.
Yeah.
Still a parfletch.
Mm-hmm.
It's for your things, which whatever she had was fairly heavy because the way it swung, you know, on the left side in relation to her steps.
Mm-hmm.
She was constantly having to correct it and hold it. She was trying to keep it on the opposite side of her body. So whatever she had, she must have considered it to be something of value.
it's so interesting. What was the reaction to the film when it was seen by the public in 1967?
Well, they showed it to they were primarily interested in scientists watching it.
Yeah.
Scientists weren't too impressed because they weren't watching what we have today to watch. They weren't watching the stabilized form, you know, made from the very best images. And they were watching a copy of a copy of a copy that was in shaky and grainy and dark. When you copy a positive film, you copy positive to positive, you end up increases in contrast.
Mm-hmm.
It's boosted. And so all your brights get brighter and all your darks get darker. And by that time, they had pretty much just showing a silhouette.
Okay.
You couldn't really tell much. And I'm trying to be fair to the scientists because these men are saying, well, we want you to watch this film, and we want you to believe it. But it was just a silhouette. You can look behind me, and that's what was on the master. See on the wall behind me?
Yep, yep.
Yeah, that's a long ways from a silhouette. So, you know, that I said at the beginning of my inquiry, I said that that there has to be a better version of the film, because you can't get a good frame from a bad film. And all I'd ever seen was the shaky, grainy, dark. So when these as a couple of frames that they essentially leaked out when the internet first became prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you what, the internet has been the receiver of a lot of leaked images since. Not just from the Patterson film, but from a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw it, I knew it had been treated the way you would treat an astrophoto if you were trying to get contrast out of it. So that's what intrigued me, was that someone was working on this really great frame to try to make it better. And so I began my inquiry, and so it ends up with stuff like you see back there on the wall. It's just one of the fantastic images. And I have Todd Gatewood's image. Can I call that one up?
Yeah,
here?
please do. Yeah.
Hold on here.
And if you're just joining us, we have on M.K. Davis, who has been spending a great deal of time trying to get more clarity out of the Patterson-Gimlin film, which is, of course, the amazing Bigfoot film from 1967. And you all know the one we're talking about, the one that the Bigfoot creature, she is walking just in the open, basically, and kind of looks back at the camera. It's incredible. And seeing the work that has been done on it is one of those things that... you know, just kind of, to me, kind of like the Zapruder film for JFK, you know, love to be able to get the best quality, to get a better look at what was happening there. And MK, the stuff that I saw in those videos were really, really incredible.
Okay, I'm going to just hit my share button, and I think you have to do something over there on your end, don't you?
Well, let's... I don't know what, but we'll take a look. Let's see here. Settings. Welcome to learning how to use StreamYard live on the air. Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. I am not seeing what I need to do, because you should be able to go into present and I think share. Quite honestly,
yeah, I've got all that done. My screen says entire screen is sitting here in front of me.
Yeah, because I'm not
share. And I hit the button.
You've
got to obey it.
Yeah, I don't see it anywhere. I don't see where I even need to do that. To be very honest, let's see here. Yeah, this is this is good times right here. Let's see if I can share screen, slides, video.
You should be down here on the menu then.
Yeah, on the menu I have present, and then share screen. That's for my own sharing of the screen, which I am unable, that I don't have anything to share. I'm looking in settings. Let's see if we can find in general here. Unfortunately, I'm not seeing what I need to do on here, and I apologize for that.
Well, that's okay. Maybe I can send you something through the messenger.
Sure.
And then you can put it up.
Sure, I can.
I have the same picture, but I have it with a watermark on it. So let me find that one.
All right. So what we're doing, I mean, and that's the fun thing about this, folks, is that we're able to take a look at some of these amazing imageries. And once again, for those of you who are listening on the radio, this is where you'll want to go seek out. Go to Ghostbox Radio with Greg Bakken on Facebook. If you're not able to do it while we're doing it live, go back and rewatch, and you'll see some of this imagery that we are going to be showing here in a second. It's really, really very cool stuff, I have to admit. And
okay, I got that. I got the watermark. Okay.
All right.
Here we go.
All right. And it'll take me a second because I need to send it to a different computer, because it's never easy, MK Davis. It's never easy just to send it to where I'm at. Okay. Oh, yeah. Look at – holy cow. That's –
Now, when you get at that up full screen, then you'll almost choke.
Yeah,
I mean, it's so good.
I'm going to take a quick. I'm going to send it to my station computer right now. It's going to take me just a second here, as we do it. And once again, folks, you're going to want to. You're going to want to check this out if you're interested in this stuff. I've never seen that any more clear. So I'm going to go over here now. I got to tell you all what I'm doing step by step, because otherwise they'll just be quiet as I'm trying to figure it out. And this is really something. Let me get here real fast. And, of course, every station computer is very slow. I have never seen anything like this before. I'm going to be very honest.
Before Todd came along, I hadn't either. I was so amazed at, and I what I did was to superimpose it over the image that I sent him to make sure nothing was added to or taken away, and it absolutely wasn't.
Are you ready for me to share?
Yeah.
Here we go. We're going to be in the background because it needs to be kind of reset. But here it is, and it is, and that is from the film.
That is from the film. That's just how good the original film was. It was, when you have a good photo, you can turn it into a great photo with his process, but. You cannot take a bad photo and do this.
No.
So you have to get something to work with that's good already.
That is.
And,
that is incredible looking. I've never. I mean, you could see the. Why don't we do this? I'm going to leave it up here for people to look at during the break. For those of you who are listening on the radio, when we come back, we'll go through very much the detail of what we're looking at here, because this is just too incredible. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to finish our conversation talking about this film, talking about this image that we're looking at right now of the Bigfoot that was taken in that Patterson-Gimlin film in 1967. You're listening to Ghostbox Radio on AM 950. And join us tomorrow on Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken. We're going to have on author Joseph Stewart as we look at his book, Demons, A Secular Look. That's going to be a great conversation. As I mentioned at the top of the program, Thursday, we're going to have question time with Dave Schrader. It's going to be a special episode that we had recorded this last Saturday at the Wabasha event at the Anderson House. It was quite the fun time. It's quite a fun episode. So even though it's not a live show that night, it's never been played before publicly, and I think you're going to enjoy it. And then Friday is Casual Friday, but we have special guest, Patty Vasquez. She does a show right after mine, Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez. It's really exciting to have her on. She's a great, great person, and we're going to find out if anything paranormal has happened to her. So that is something to look forward to. But boy, we were having a fantastic conversation with MK Davis. We've been talking about this Patterson-Gimlin film. And this image that MK has sent to me that was actually provided to you by Todd Gatewood, this is really something else. And the more I was looking at it, MK, is that the facial structure, the nose and the eyes in particular, those are incredible.
Well, they match pretty well to what eyewitness accounts from people who have seen them up close in daylight.
Yeah.
Have said, and one of them, there was a lady who, she was camping and she had just gotten into camp and had to use the restroom, and she stepped out away and got into this little, opening there, and it had a lot of ferns and stuff. Mm-hmm. And she was relieving herself, and she heard something. And she looked across the little clearing, and this Bigfoot was walking straight toward her. And she stood up, snapped her pants, and the Bigfoot walked within 15 feet of her. Mm-hmm. She said it never turned its head toward her. It just cut its eyes at her. And she says that was the most outstanding thing about it was it was the eyes were just fabulously beautiful. They had long eyelashes, and the color was so pretty. But it was an older Sasquatch, and it had a wound on its shoulder that was infected.
Oh.
And it was you could tell by its breast that it was old. But the eyes were the most outstanding thing about it. And I think you'll agree that this one right here has some outstanding eyes. Look at the length of the eyelashes.
Totally. And there's so much life in those eyes. It's incredible. Yeah,
right. It is. I agree. Worlds collided on that day.
Yeah.
Her world and their world and our world all intersected.
Do you have any possible thought or theory how long they live for, a lifespan?
I really don't. It would require being able to follow one for its mm-hmm. life, you right. know, to see. I know that their physique is such, it's very different from us, when I say us, I mean modern man.
Yeah.
It is so massive and dense what I've been able to determine that a cubic inch of Sasquatch flesh would weigh about double what a cubic inch of our flesh would weigh.
That makes sense.
And it has all the appropriate organs and things to support that kind of fibrous muscle. That would mean the heart and the lungs and vascular system.
And the reason why I ask is because I just wonder, and obviously I know you can't answer. It's more of just a question out loud, is wonder if she's still alive.
Well, I personally was not around back then. And I don't live in that area, but I have some testimony that seems to indicate that she perhaps is not.
Oh.
I'll just leave it at that.
Sure.
But it would require a lot of explanation. But for that day, for that moment, the life that's in her, you can see it. You can see it in her face. You know, when someone's eyes, you can almost read them.
I mean, to me, it just looks like a mother.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Now, am I correct in understanding that the reason why Patterson did not follow her any further was that he was afraid that there were more waiting for him down the path that she was walking?
Well, he didn't. He wasn't just afraid of it. He knew it.
He knew it.
Yeah, there had been a party of seven of them that had been together up on top of the mountain up there and had been split up. And Patty, the one they call Patty here, and I guess her husband and a small one came down that way, mm-hmm. to the drain, to the Bluff Creek itself. And by the time that you see the film here, you don't see the other two. So he knew that they were there. He just didn't know where.
You know,
getting Mr. Bigfoot mad at you probably wouldn't be too smart.
Well, and it makes me wonder if, and I mean, this is me watching too many like thug films and stuff. It's like they had her walk over there as sort of like to draw them, Patterson and Gimlin, over there so that they could, you know, either scare them off or whatever else. I don't know. You know, if she was used almost as bait.
That's a good way of looking at it. You know, I assume that she's got a good bit of smarts to her.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, now as far as the entire story as how it could be put together, you know, that there began seven. They split up, and then they ended up with just getting her on film. Now, whether it was her Mr. Bigfoot or maybe one of the other seven that he was afraid of, I don't know.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. I mean, and just the fact that by the time that film was taken, they had already been seeing them quite a bit in, like you said, swinging in the trees and whatever else, that they were not shy that day, were they?
No, yeah, as far as the Bigfoot?
Yeah.
I don't know about swinging in the trees.
Where did I hear that? I thought you said that earlier. I apologize.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you, she's pushing 1,000 pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it would be very many trees that
could handle that weight.
Yeah, a small one. A child probably could go up a tree.
Yeah,
you know, but I wouldn't think her. You know, I think that she would be just trying to walk away.
Well, and it makes sense as what you say because, like, we see it. We see either the nests or the warning areas that the trees are bent, right? That they're bent into shapes and not broken a lot of times, but actually bent. And I mean, that's that sort of power that's pulling them, pulling like that sort of weight that has that strength to pull them.
Yeah, I've seen like a 3 or 4 inch tree just snapped off.
Yeah.
And then I've seen a tree darn near that size pull up by the roots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The root ball and all gone.
We were, I was in the Kentucky, Indiana area, and we saw stuff I've never thought I would see in my life that was along those lines as well, with trees just being bent and turned into like a structure of some kind. I've never seen anything like it before, and it just defies explanation in a lot of ways.
Well, when it comes to the Patterson film, it you're looking at a very complicated scenario,
mm-hmm.
and the story itself, the story itself leaves a lot to be desired. If you look into the nuts and bolts of the story, mm-hmm. the storyline that they tell to explain the film is very inadequate.
Okay.
So something else occurred there besides what they said. And so I know a good bit about it, but, you know, we just don't have time to get into it, in 1 hour. You know, you just have to kind of, it would take, it's voluminous. But that's kind of the way it is.
Well, it sounds like a book that needs to be written, doesn't it?
Well, probably so. You know, it's not easy to call the film's maker, you know, a storyteller.
Yeah.
But I'm satisfied the film is real, but I'm just as satisfied that their story is not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not real. It's not authentic. Something else occurred. I know that they were down there past November.
Okay.
So they had made themselves a makeshift corral and had fresh hay in it, and that was in November.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's they took the film on a Friday and showed it on a Sunday. And this film was of a peculiar stock. It only had two places in the United States that would develop it. Had 2 week turnaround time.
Oh,
you see what I mean?
Absolutely.
It was just, you know, it's just they're not telling the whole story.
Well, and I was reading, you know, and reading doesn't always mean facts, but I was reading that there was conversation that. You know, that film was shot in 1967, but some believed, as you're just basically saying, that there are some that believe it was shot before that.
Yeah, but me being an astrophotographer, I look at the things like the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at that latitude, October the 20th, you can't have a shadow right under you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's summertime stuff.
Yep. Yep.
And once it gets into October, the sun never gets high enough for that. So that tells you right there that it wasn't October. But, you know, some people say, well, it don't matter. But I think it matters. I think all the facts matter.
Well,
it's an important film.
It is. And you get to the point of, like, if you can't believe when they say it's shot, then what else is not factual? And I guess the only saving grace to that is, like, the work that you and Todd are doing and others that are...
I agree with that.
And
yeah.
And do you... I mean, we have about a minute and a half left here. Do you have a theory why that they weren't upright with the timing of when the film was shot?
Well, I won't get into the nuts and bolts of it because I don't have enough time, but I will say that something occurred during that time that they did not want the general public. It was not intended for the general public. So they rather than tell the whole story as it occurred, they excused themselves. Made a tailored story. The film, what you see on the film is very edited. It's in two or three different sections.
Yes, it is. That leads to my last question. Do you think there's more that we hadn't seen?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I've never thought of that before.
You can really get into some things when you, this is a complex film. It's not a, it's not somebody standing there and taking a film of their Aunt Martha or something.
Yeah.
You know, it really is complex, but it can be explained. it takes time.
And it's one of those things that if you're just a layperson like myself and you're just watching it at face value, you may miss the fact that you're jumping around quite a bit, actually.
Yeah. It's cut off. She starts out one direction. Suddenly she's upstream.
Yeah.
Walking upstream out in the open. And then again, it jumps again. So it's any time that you have a skip in the action like that, it's either done with the camera off and on, or it's either done with in the editing room. You know, it's editing either way.
Absolutely, MK Davis. We're out of time. Thank you so very much. Hopefully, we can catch up at some point and talk more about this if that works for you.
Sure, I would be happy.
That is fantastic. Everyone, thank you very much for joining me today. What a fascinating conversation. We're back tomorrow talking about demons. Have a good night, everybody.